difference between entering your woman's feminine heart and entering fully into the world. Both forms of intercourse, sexually and worldly, require sensitivity, spontaneity, and a strong connection to deep truth in order to penetrate chaos and closure in a way that love prevails. Neither woman nor world are predictable. They will often seem to resist your gifts and test your capacity to persist. And, just as surely, they will tenderly respond to the authenticity of your relaxed ministrations, the freedom expressed in your humor, and the invasion of your adamant love. They will open in love and receive you fully, only to resist and test you again, moments or days later. Neither woman nor world can be second-guessed or fooled. They know when you are just dicking around. They want to receive you for real. There are two ways to deal with woman and world without compromising your true gifts or dribbling away the force of your deep being. One way is to renounce sexual intimacy and worldliness, totally dedicating yourself without distraction or compromise to the path you chose to pursue, free of the seemingly constant demands of woman and world. The other way is to fuck both to smithereens, to ravish them with your love unsheathed, to give your true gifts despite the constant tussle of woman and world, to smelt your authentic gifts in this friction of opposition and surrender, to thrust love from the freedom of your deep being, even as your body and mind die blissfully through a crucifixion of inevitable pleasure and pain, attraction and repulsion, gain and loss. No gifts left ungiven. No limit to the depth of being. Only openness, freedom, and love as the legacy of your intercourse with woman and world. If you're going to tryst with women and world at all, better to go all the way and ravish them from the depths of your true core, blooming them open with the wide gifts of your unrelenting heart. Otherwise, if you sheepishly penetrate them to gratify your own needs, your woman and the world will feel your lack of dedication, depth, and truth. Rather than yielding in love to your loving, they will distract you, suck your energy, and draw you into endless complications so that your life and relationship become an almost constant search for release from constraint. You can be a renunciate and live alone, apart from woman and world. But if you choose a life of sexual and worldly intercourse, you will feel trapped by woman and world unless you are free in the midst of true fuck, yielding yourself into the giving, holding nothing back, dissolving all time in the open of love. Through thick and thin, this is the way of the superior man. Chapter 10. Enjoy your friend's criticism. A man's capacity to receive another man's direct criticism is a measure of his capacity to receive masculine energy. If he doesn't have a good relationship to masculine energy, for example, his father, then he will act like a woman and be hurt or defensive, rather than make use of other men's criticism. About once a week, you should sit down with your closest men friends and discuss what you are doing in your life and what you are afraid of doing. The conversation should be short and simple. You should state where you are at. Then, your friends should give you a behavioral experiment, something you can do that will reveal something to you, or grant more freedom in your life. I want to have an affair with Denise, but I don't want to hurt my wife. I'm afraid of her finding out, you might say. You've been talking about Denise now for 6 months. You are wasting your life energy on this fantasy. You should either have sex with her by tomorrow night, or drop the whole thing and never talk about it again, your friends might say, challenging your hesitation and mediocrity. Okay, I know I'm not going to do it. I see now that I am too afraid of ruining my marriage to have an affair with Denise. My marriage is more important than my desire for Denise. I'll drop it and refocus on the priorities in my life. Thanks. Your close men friends should be willing to challenge your mediocrity by suggesting a concrete action you can perform that will pop you out of your rut, one way or the other. And you must be willing to offer them your brutal honesty in the same way, if you are all to grow. Good friends should not tolerate mediocrity in one another. If you are at your edge, your men friends should respect that, but not let you off the hook. They should honor your fears and, in love, continue to goad you beyond them without pushing you. If you merely want support from your men friends without challenge, It bespeaks an unresolved issue you may have with your father, whether he is alive or dead. The father force is the force of loving challenge and guidance. Without this masculine force in your life, your direction becomes unchecked, and you are liable to meander in the mush of your own ambiguity and indecision. Your close men friends can provide the stark light of love, uncompromised by a fearful Mr. Nice Act, by which you can see the direction you really want to go. Choose men friends who themselves are living at their edge, facing their fears and living just beyond them. Men of this kind can love you without protecting you from the necessary confrontation with reality that your life involves. You should be able to trust that these friends will tell you about your life as they see it, offer you a specific action which will shed light on your own position, and give you the support necessary to live in the freedom just beyond your edge, which is not always or even usually comfortable. Chapter 11. If you don't know your purpose, discover it now. Without a conscious life purpose, a man is totally lost, drifting, adapting to events rather than creating events. Without knowing his life purpose, a man lives a weakened, impotent existence, perhaps eventually becoming even sexually impotent or prone to mechanical and disinterested sex. The core of your life is your purpose. Everything in your life, from your diet to your career, must be aligned with your purpose if you are to act with coherence and integrity in the world. If you know your purpose, your deepest desire, then the secret of success is to discipline your life so that you support your deepest purpose and minimize distractions and detours. But if you don't know your deepest desire, then you can't align your life to it. Everything in your life is dissociated from your core. You go to work, but since it's not connected to your deepest purpose, it is just a job, a way to earn money. You go through your daily round with your family and friends, but each moment is just another in a long string of moments, going nowhere, not inherently profound. Disconnected from your core, you feel weak. This empty feeling will undermine not only your erection in the world, but your erection with your woman too. However, when you know your true purpose, which is your core desire in life, each moment can become a full expression of your core desire. Every instant of career, every instant of intimacy is filled with the power of your heart purpose. You are no longer just going through the motions at work and with your woman, but you are living the truth of your life and giving the gifts of your love moment by moment. Such a life is complete unto itself in every instant. The superior man is not seeking for fulfillment through work and woman because he is already full. For him, work and intimacy are opportunities to give his gifts and be vanished in the bliss of the giving. Chapter 12. Be willing to change everything in your life. A man must be prepared to give 100% to his purpose, fulfill his karma or dissolve it, and then let go of that specific form of living. He must be capable of not knowing what to do with his life, entering a period of unknowingness and waiting for a vision or a new form of purpose to emerge. These cycles of strong specific action, followed by periods of not knowing what the hell is going on, are natural for a man who is shedding layers of karma in his relaxation into truth. As you open yourself to living at your edge, your deepest purpose will slowly begin to make itself known. In the meantime, you will experience layer after layer of purposes, each one getting closer and closer to the fullness of your deepest purpose. It is as if your deepest purpose is at the center of your being, and it is surrounded by layers of concentric circles, each circle being a lesser purpose. Your life consists of penetrating each circle from the outside toward the center. The outer purposes are often the purposes you have inherited or learned from your parents and your childhood experiences. Perhaps your father was a fireman, so you wanted to be a fireman. Or, in reaction to him, you've decided to be an arsonist. In any case, the outer circles, the purposes you often apply yourself to early in life, are most likely only distant approximations of your deepest purpose. If your deepest purpose is to meditate and realize God, you might find that before you can totally dedicate yourself to this practice, you must work your way through the concentric circles of playing with sexual partners, using drugs, getting married, raising children, developing a career, and finally, having dissolved your fascination and need to do all of that, getting down to the business of full-time meditation. As you dissolve each layer and move toward the center, you will more and more be living from your deeper purposes, and then your deepest heart purpose, whatever that is, in every moment. However, you probably are not living your deepest purpose yet. You probably need to burn off the karma or fulfill the need of the present purpose by which you are fascinated and distracted. It's easy to feel disappointed by life. Success is never as fulfilling as you think it is going to be. But there is a reason for this. Successfully completing a lesser purpose doesn't feel very good for very long, because it is simply preparation for advancing toward a greater embodiment of your deeper purpose. Each purpose, each mission, is meant to be fully lived to the point where it becomes empty, boring, and useless. Then it should be discarded. This is a sign of growth, but you may mistake it for a sign of failure. For instance, you may take on a business project, work at it for several years, and then suddenly find yourself totally disinterested. You know that if you stayed with it for another few years, you would reap much greater financial reward than if you left the project now. But the project no longer calls you. You no longer feel interested in the project. You have developed skills over the last few years working on the project, but it hasn't yet come to fruition. You may wonder, now that you have the skills, should you stick with it and bring the project to fruition, even though the work feels empty to you? Well, maybe you should stick with it. Maybe you are bailing out too soon, afraid of success or failure, or just too lazy to persevere. This is one possibility. Ask your close men friends if they feel you are simply losing steam, wimping out, or afraid to bring your project to completion. If they feel you are bailing out too soon, stick with it. However, there is also the possibility that you have completed your karma in this area. It is possible that this was one layer of purpose, which you have now fulfilled, on the way to another layer of purpose, closer to your deepest purpose. Among the signs of fulfilling or completing a layer of purpose are these. 1. You suddenly have no interest whatsoever in a project or mission that just previously motivated you highly. 2. You feel surprisingly free of any regrets whatsoever for starting the project or for ending it. 3. Even though you may not have the slightest idea of what you are going to do next, you feel clear and especially unburdened. 4. You feel an increase in energy at the prospect of ceasing your involvement with the project. 5. The project seems almost silly, like collecting shoelaces or wallpapering your house with gas station receipts. Sure, you could do it, but why would you want to? If you experience these signs, it is probably time to stop working on this project. You must end your involvement impeccably, however, making sure there are no loose ends and that you do not burden anybody's life by stopping your involvement. This might take some time, but it is important that this layer of your purpose ends cleanly and does not create any new karma or obligation that will burden you or others in the future. The next layer of your unfolding purpose may make itself clear immediately. More often, however, it does not. After completing one layer of purpose, you might not know what to do with your life. You know that the old project is over for you, but you are not sure of what is next. At this point, you must wait for a vision. There is no way to rush this process. You may need to get an intermediary job to hold you over until the next layer of purpose makes itself clear. Or perhaps you have enough money to simply wait. But in any case, it is important to open yourself to a vision of what is next. You stay open to a vision of your deeper purpose by not filling your time with distractions. Don't watch TV or play computer games. Don't go out drinking beer with your friends every night or start dating a bunch of women. Simply wait. You may wish to go on a retreat in a remote area and be by yourself. Whatever it is you decide to do, consciously keep yourself open and available to receiving a vision of what is next. It will come. When it comes, it usually won't be a detailed vision. You will probably have a sense of what direction to move in, but the practical steps might not make themselves clear. When the impulse begins to arise, act on it. Don't wait for the details. Learn by trial and error what it is you are to do. For instance, perhaps you were a stockbroker and then finished that particular layer of purpose. You saved up some money, so now you are waiting for a vision of your next layer. After 3 weeks of going crazy, not knowing what you are going to do with your life, you begin to feel that you want to work with people. You begin to fantasize about using your financial skills to help people set up their own businesses. You have a few friends who have great intentions to save the world, but they are lousy businessmen and can't seem to get off the ground. So you call them and offer your help. As you help them, you continually feel for the groove of your purpose. You might have a few false starts, but eventually you find that dozens of nonprofit groups are telephoning you asking for your advice. It feels as if the universe is supporting you in this direction. You have no idea whether you can earn a living doing this, but it feels right for now. So you apply yourself fully to it. You give your gift 100% without holding anything back. Soon, a wealthy man finds out about what you are doing. He admires your total commitment and your orientation to serve others. He becomes your patron. Now you are set. You have a good income, you are doing what you really want to do, and you are helping others. You love what you do. So you generate love in those who come in contact with you. Your life feels full. And then one day, a few years later, it is finished. This layer has dissolved, and the cycle begins again and again, until you have penetrated all the layers into your deepest purpose. Then you act fully, until that purpose too is dissolved in the bliss of the love that you are. Chapter 13. Don't use your family as an excuse. If a man never discovers his deepest purpose, or if he permanently compromises it and uses his family as an excuse for doing so, then his core becomes weakened and he loses depth and presence. His woman loses trust and sexual polarity with him, even though he may be putting much energy into parenting their children and doing the housework. A man should, of course, be a full participant in caring for children and the household. But if he gives up his deepest purpose to do so, ultimately, everyone suffers. Take care of the children and the house as much as you want. Just remember that if you give up your true purpose to do so for too long, you are not really helping anyone. Parenting children, as well as any responsible commitment in love, requires that you transcend your own personal preferences for the sake of the larger commitment, for the sake of service and love. This is a natural part of being a householder. However, you cannot abnegate your deepest purpose to do so, or else you will feel frustrated, eventually resigning yourself to a lesser life than you know you are capable of living. This self-resignation will communicate itself to your woman and your children. They will feel your weakness. Your woman will begin to take charge more than she really wants, since you are clearly not capable of taking charge yourself, and someone has to do it. Your children will challenge your capacity to discipline them, since they can feel your own lack of authentic self-discipline. Try as you might, once you have negated your own deep purpose, your household will become a place where everybody tests your capacity to stand your ground, and you will lose. Obviously, as a father or a householder, you will want to give your love, skill, energy, and time to your family. It will be your joy. It will also be a necessity. However, the motive to dedicate time to householding may or may not be symmetrical between partners, and this should be an ongoing discovery for each couple. This motive may change over time for both men and women as their lives grow through different stages. The priority of the feminine in men and women is the flow of love in relationship. The priority of the masculine in men and women is the mission which leads to freedom. Ultimately, true freedom and true love are the same. However, the journey of the masculine and feminine to this unity of love and freedom is very different. if your woman has a more feminine essence than you, or if she is in a more feminine phase of life than you, then her priority will be the flow of love in her life. Her core will be much more fulfilled by the love she shares with the children than yours will be. You will also feel great fulfillment sharing love with your children. But if you have a masculine core, or if you are in a masculine phase of your life, this fulfillment will not touch your deepest parts in the same way. Even if you love your children every bit as much as your woman does, your relationship with them will only be part of your deepest life purpose. What is your deepest life purpose? For some men, their deepest life purpose is their family. If you are one of these men, then you probably aren't concerned about the issue of whether or not you are using your family as an excuse. Many men, however, regardless of how much they love their family, also feel a deeper calling. If they do not live true to this calling, then their core weakens, even if they genuinely love and desire to serve their family. When you know your direction and are living it fully, your core is alive and strong. Your children will naturally feel this. They will respond to your clarity and presence differently than they will respond to your ambiguity. An ambiguity that results from having detoured from your deepest purpose because you think it's right or fair that you spend time with them. A short period of time with a father who is absolutely present, full in love, undivided inside, and sure of his mission in life, will affect your children much more positively than if they spend lots of time with a father who is ambiguous in his intent and has lost touch with his deepest purpose, no matter how much he loves his children. Children learn most from their parents by osmosis. If their father is subtly weakened and compromised, this will flavor their experience of his love. Just as you did with your father, your children will unconsciously replicate or react to the emotional taste they absorb from you. Your essential emotional tone, at ease in your deepest purpose or fearful in the ambiguity of your intent, becomes part of your children's home. If you and your woman both work, it is better to make arrangements with other families to timeshare child caring, or to hire someone to help with your children, than to permanently compromise your deepest purpose and truth because you feel you must do so to spend more time with your children. It is not the amount of time, but the quality of the interaction that most influences a child's growth. Children are exquisitely sensitive to emotional tone. If you are not full in your core, aligned with your deepest purpose, and living a life of authentic commitment, your children will feel it. For their sake, your sake, and your woman's sake, discover your deepest purpose, commit yourself completely to its process, and find a way to embrace your family as you do so. Be with your woman and your children without compromise or ambiguity. Don't use your family as an excuse to be less than you can be. With birth control so readily available, children are a choice. If you choose to be a householder and raise children, you are responsible for serving them with as much authentic love as possible, which you can only give if your life is aligned with your deepest purpose. Don't cheat your family of your fullest core, and don't use them as an excuse to avoid the work it will take to manifest your highest vision. You can give love to your family and engage your life's work if you discipline yourself to act on your deepest desires with priority. Then, when you are with your family, you are with them totally, since there is no chronically unfinished business in your life to distract you, and no inner ambiguity about where you want to be or what you really want to be doing. Chapter 14. Don't get lost in tasks and duties. Whatever the specifics of a man's purpose, he must always refresh the transcendental elements of his life through regular meditation and retreat. A man should never get lost in the details of his life and forget that. Ultimately, and in truth, life amounts to nothing other than what is the deepest truth of his present moment. Tasks don't get a man anywhere more conscious or free than he is capable of being in this present moment. You have probably noticed yourself in the do mode. You are totally focused, intent on getting a task done. You don't want to be disturbed. If anyone tries to interrupt you with a question, you ignore them, or give them a quick answer so you can keep on track. This do mode is very common among men, Whether you are trying to hear something on TV or finish a report by midnight, your attention is focused on the task at hand, and you don't want to be distracted. This do mode is one of men's biggest strengths and weaknesses. It's great to be able to plow through obstructions and get the job done. And it's good to keep yourself disciplined and on purpose. But if you forget your larger purpose while pursuing the small and endless tasks of daily life, then you have reduced yourself to a machine of picayune. Even now, as you listen to this, you may be in a do mode, totally ensconced in the process of listening. If you were to die right now, what would be the feeling texture of your last moment? Are you feeling the infinite mystery of existence so that your last moment would be one of awe and gratitude? Is your heart so wide open that your last moment would dissolve in perfect love? Or are you so absorbed in some task that you would hardly notice death upon you, until the last instant, whoosh, and everything is gone? The test of your fullness in every moment is your capacity to die in free and loving surrender, knowing you've done everything you could do while alive to give your gift and know the truth of being. Have you loved fully? Or do you have unexpressed feelings that would taint your last moment with regret? Do you consistently relax into the awe of immense mystery? Or are you so absorbed in your work and projects that you no longer feel the miracle of existence, each moment emerging from and dissolving into the great unknowable? Has your task addiction built blinders that limit the vastness of your vision, even now? Tasks are important, but no amount of duties adds up to love, freedom, or full consciousness. You cannot do enough, nor can you do the right things so that you will finally feel complete. Doing is simply the nature of your bodily life. If you want the body to continue, you must eat and breathe. You must work, care for your family, and brush your teeth. But these are just the mechanics of life on earth. They never come to the absolute truth of your being. When you do your tasks in the right way, they liberate your life energy so that you can attend to what really matters, the investigation, realization, and embodiment of true freedom. Do you even know what this means? Have you devoted yourself to finding out the deepest truth of your own existence? If, in this very moment, your tasks are not supporting your life in this way, you must drop them or change them so that they do. Otherwise, you are wasting your life. Whereas many women waste precious time swirling in emotional currents and eddies, many men waste their birth seeking the completion of tasks. Nose to the grindstone, day after day, year after year, and you become a robot of duty. Rather, raise your eyes, see to the horizon, and do your tasks in the spirit of sweeping out your house on a sunny day. To help you remember the triviality of your daily tasks, interrupt yourself with refreshers. These refreshers should cut to your core and strip the fat off the moment. Consider your own death. Behold an image of the most enlightened being you know. Contemplate the mystery of existence. Relax into the deepest and most profound loving of which you are capable. In your own way, remember the infinite, and then return to the task at hand. This way, you will never lose perspective and begin to think that life is a matter of tasks. You are not a drone. You are the unbounded mystery of love. Be so, without forgetting your tasks. Chapter 15. Stop hoping for your woman to get easier. A woman often seems to test her man's capacity to remain unperturbed in his truth and purpose. She tests him to feel his freedom and depth of love, to know that he is trustable. Her tests may come in the form of complaining, challenging him, changing her mind, doubting him, distracting him, or even undermining his purpose in a subtle or not so subtle way. A man should never think his woman's testing is going to end and his life will get easier. Rather, he should appreciate that she does these things to feel his strength, integrity, and openness. Her desire is for his deepest truth and love. As he grows, so will her testing. Every moment of your life is either a test or a celebration. The same is true about every moment with your woman, only doubly so. Not only is her simple existence a test for you, but one of her deepest pleasures in intimacy is testing you, and then feeling you are not moved off course by her challenge. The most erotic moment for a woman is feeling that you are Shiva, the divine masculine, unperturbable, totally loving, fully present, and all-pervading. She cannot move you because you are already what you are, with or without her. She cannot scare you away because you already penetrate her in fearless love, pervading her heart and body. She cannot distract you because your one-pointed commitment to truth will not bend to her wiles. Feeling this hugeness of love and freedom in you, she can trust you, utterly, and surrender her testing in celebration of love. Until she wants to feel you as Shiva again, and then the testing will begin anew. In fact, it is precisely when you are most Shiva-like that she will most test you. Perhaps you have been working towards some financial goal, and finally you have succeeded. After months or years of effort, you have creatively earned a large amount of money. You feel happy, full, successful. You feel great. You come home to your woman and want to share the news with her. "I just made $1 million today." "That's nice." "That's nice. You know how hard I've been working for this?" "I know. It feels like I haven't seen you in months. Did you remember to pick up the milk on the way home?" "Oh, sorry, I forgot. But who cares? We could buy a dairy farm now. I asked you to pick up the milk 3 times this morning, and I put a note on your briefcase. How could you forget?" "I said I'm sorry. Look, I'll go get the damn milk." Why is she being this way? Because she simply wants to deflate your success? No. She is challenging you because your success doesn't mean shit to her, unless you are free and loving. And if you are free and loving, nothing she says can collapse you. She wants to feel you are uncollapsible, so she pokes you in your weak spot. Of course she knows how much this moment of success means to you. This is precisely why she is negating it. Not because she wants to hurt you, but because she wants to feel Shiva. She wants to feel your strength. She wants to feel that your happiness is not dependent on her response, nor on you making $1 million. She wants to feel you are a superior man. It's a tall order to be this free, and in your more mediocre moments, you will wish your woman would settle for less. But if you are a man who is living his fullest, willing to play his edge and grow through difficulties, then you will want her to test you. You may not like it, but you don't want her to settle for some bozo who depends on his woman's response to be happy. If you are aligned with your mission, you are essentially happy, even though times cycle between difficult and easy. You don't need your woman's strokes to fulfill your mission. It still feels good when she strokes you, but you don't need mommy anymore, telling you what a good boy you are, and your woman doesn't want you to need mommy. In fact, it sickens her. If your woman is weak, she may settle for a weak man and, therefore, play into your need to feel like a good boy. But if she is a good woman, a strong woman, she won't tolerate your childish needs for a pat on the head, collecting bigger toys, and being king of the mountain. A good woman will love the childlike part of you, but she wants your life to be guided by your deepest truths, not your untended childhood wounds. She wants to feel that at your core, you have grown beyond the need for kudos and million-dollar toys. She wants to feel your self-generated strength of truth. So, she will test you. She might not be fully conscious of why she is doing it, but she will poke your weak spots, especially in moments of your superficial success, in order to feel your strength. If you collapse, you flunked the test. You have let your woman deflate you. You have demonstrated your dependence on her for external validation. Even if you just made $1 million, you are a weak man. Your woman cannot trust you fully. If you remain full and strong, humorous and happy, your truth unperturbed by her testing, then you pass the test. "Honey, I'll get you some milk, all right," you say as you sweep her off the ground and lay her on the couch, laughing, kissing, looking deeply into her eyes and milking her happiness with the confident loving of your caresses. She can relax and trust your Shiva core. She can surrender the tensions around her heart. You are trustable. You don't need her validation in order for you to be loving. You simply are loving. The truth of you is love. Your fullness is independent of mommy. You are not only a man, you are a superior man, a man who does his best to live his love in the world and in his intimacy, a man whose heart remains open and whose truth remains strong even when his woman criticizes him, a man who can find the humor in forgetting to pick up the milk on a day he made $1 million. This is the kind of man your woman can trust. Now, the moment is a moment of celebration. Now she can relax and truly join in your jubilation, knowing you are not dependent on her praise for your happiness. It will last, perhaps, 10 minutes, and then she will test you again. It never ends. A woman will always test her man for the pleasure of feeling his strength and loving, his capacity to transcend nuisance, his persistence in his own truth, and his capacity to share that truth in love with her, even when she is complaining. Especially when she is complaining. Her complaint is the beginning of her pleasure. It is not true criticism, but a test of your Shivahood. The criticism is entirely dissolved in love as soon as she feels your humor and happiness in the midst of the poke. It never ends. This is the secret. You can't get out of it. Finding a different woman won't get you out of it. Therapy won't get you out of it. Financial or sexual mastery won't get you out of it. Your woman is testing you because she loves you. She wants to feel your truth. She wants to feel your love. And she wants to feel that your truth and love are stronger than the barbs she can throw at you. Then she can relax and surrender into the polarity of man and woman. Then she can trust you. The most loving women are the women who will test you the most. She wants you to be your fullest, most magnificent self. She won't settle for anything less. She knows it is true of you. She knows in your deepest heart you are free. You are Shiva. Anything less than that, she will torment. And, as you know, she's quite good at it. Yet, if your purpose is to be free, you wouldn't have it any other way. Part 2. Dealing with Women. Chapter 16. Women Are Not Liars. Keeping your word is a masculine trait, in men or women. A person with a feminine essence may not keep her word, yet it is not exactly lying. In the feminine reality, words and facts take a second place to emotions and the shifting moods of relationship. When she says, "I hate you," or "I'll never move to Texas," or "I don't want to go to the movies," it is often more reflection of a transient feeling wave than a well-considered stance with respect to events and experience. On the other hand, the masculine means what it says. A man's word is his honor. The feminine says what it feels. A woman's word is her true expression in the moment. When you listen to your woman, listen to her as you would the ocean or the wind in the leaves. The sounds you hear from her are sounds of the motion of her feeling energy. Of course, there are times when she speaks in the masculine style of meaning exactly what she says, but more often, and almost always in emotional moments, what she says is the sound of her feelings. Her feminine speech is far more like poetry than like a clear-cut agenda for action. In an emotional moment, what she says she is going to do is actually an expression of what she feels like doing in the moment. Her feelings, and therefore what she is actually going to do, could change in 5 minutes. It could change every 5 minutes. Whenever you are surprised by your woman's actions, and you say to her, "But you said," you are forgetting that she has a feminine essence. What your woman says is like a cloud passing in the sky. Well-formed, coherent, and unrecognizable moments later. The cloud is an expression of the precise physics of water, wind, and air. Your woman's words are the expressions of the physics of her feelings, your relationship, and the nuances of the present situation, seen and unseen. A moment later, these factors will change, and so will your woman's expressions. You might ask her, "Do you want to go to the movies?" She might reply, "Not really." Then you hug her and spin her around and say, "Let's go to the movies." And she says, "Okay." She is not talking about her desire to go to the movies. She is talking about the feeling of your relationship in the present moment. If after she said she didn't want to go to the movies, you said, fine, and sat down to watch TV, you would be missing the point. She is not really saying she doesn't want to go to the movies, even though that is what she's saying. This is not lying. For a man, or for anyone speaking in the masculine style, to say something that is not true is lying. But for the feminine, truth is a thin concept compared to the thickness of her flow of feelings. The truth of the feminine is whatever she is really feeling in this present moment. So, when she says that she wants to move to Pittsburgh with you, and then, after you have sold the house, she says she doesn't want to move with you, don't start yelling, "But you said..." When she first told you she wanted to move, she was feeling good about the relationship. When she then told you she doesn't want to move, she was feeling bad about the relationship. Instead of arguing about what she said or didn't say, establish love in the intimacy first. The basic rule is this. Don't believe the literal content of what your woman says unless love is flowing deeply and fully in the moment when she says it. And even then, know that she is probably talking about her current feelings, not necessarily about the subject of whatever she is talking about. Never base your plans on what a woman says she wants to do, unless she is in the full flow of love when she says it. And then, expect her to change her mind at any moment when her feelings change. Remember that a woman's feelings may be more sensitive to an unseen realm of nature than are yours. Try to differentiate between your woman's shifting moods and her sensitive wisdom. Women are not liars, although they often seem that way to men. This is why a man must ultimately be responsible for making his own decisions based on the deepest truth he can fathom. Otherwise, if he bends his course of truth to compromise for his woman's current and changing expressions, he will probably end up blaming her. You should hear what your woman has to say and feel her depth carefully. Then, after you have fully considered her input, make your best possible decision from your own deep core. This way, if your woman subsequently changes her mind, you won't resent her for compromising your path. Rather, you can enjoy her subtle sensitivity and changing emotional weather patterns. You can proceed with or modify your actions in full gear, knowing you are always making the best choice available to you, having taken her depth of wisdom and her fluctuations of expression and mood wholly into account. Chapter 17. Praise Her. The masculine grows by challenge, but the feminine grows by praise. A man must be unabashed and expressed in his appreciation for his woman. Praise her freely. Men grow by challenge. As a boy, other boys would challenge you in order to inspire you. I bet you can't jump over that fence. In a place like boot camp, you are told you are a worthless slime dog, and this kind of insult challenges you to be your best. So, as a man, you probably have a masculine habit of challenging people, including your woman, in order to get her to improve or grow. Only the masculine side of your woman will grow through challenge. The feminine side thrives on support and praise. Telling her, "I love the shape of your body," will be much greater incentive for her to exercise than telling her, "I hope you don't gain any more weight." Praise always magnifies the quality of your woman that you praise. "You're so beautiful when you smile" is much more effective than "You're so ugly when you frown," although they both indicate your desire for her smile. When speaking to your woman, it is always better to call the glass half full than half empty. Praise is literal food for feminine qualities. If you want your woman to grow in her radiance, health, happiness, love, beauty, power, and depth, praise these qualities. Praise them daily, a number of times. It is a difficult practice for most men to learn, but you must learn to praise the very qualities you feel are not yet praiseworthy in order for them to become so. In other words, praise the tiny quality that you want to grow. If you know that your woman would be healthier if she exercised more, don't tell her that. It will feel like an insult to her, a rejection of her the way she is. Instead, tell her how sexy she is when she sweats in her leotards. Tell her how much it turns you on when she moves her body. Whatever parts of her body you really like, let her know, frequently. praising the things you really enjoy when she exercises will magnify her exercising. On the other hand, by telling her why she should exercise, you are indicating that she is not acceptable to you the way she is. Praise works. Information doesn't. Praise motivates. Challenge doesn't. Try it. Praise specific things you love about your woman 5 to 10 times a day. Find out what happens. Chapter 18. Tolerating her leads to resenting her. A man gets resentful and frustrated with his woman when he is too afraid, weak, or unskilled to penetrate her moods and tests into love. He wishes she were easier to deal with, but it is not entirely her fault that she is bitchy and complaining. It is also a reflection of her lack of being penetrated by love. When a man resigns and simply tolerates his woman's self-destructive moods, it is a sign of his weakness. His attitude has become one of wanting to escape women and the world, rather than wanting to serve women and the world into love. A man shouldn't tolerate bitchy and complaining moodiness in his woman, but he should serve her and love her with every ounce of his skill and perseverance. Then, if she cannot or will not open in love, he might decide to end his relationship with her, harboring no anger or resentment because he knows he has done everything he could. The whole point of an intimacy is to serve each other in growth and love, hopefully in better ways than we can serve ourselves. Otherwise, why engage in intimacy if your growth and love are served more by living alone? Intimacy is about growing more than you could by yourself, through the art of mutual gifting. One of the largest gifts you can give your woman is your capacity to open her heart when it is closed. Sure, she can get herself out of her dark mood, but your masculine thunderbolt of love can brighten her darkness in a way she can't do for herself. If you are like most men, however, you probably end up feeling burdened by your woman's mood. You feel your woman is a pain in the ass. You wish your woman would leave you alone and take care of herself. Eventually, you feel worn down or frustrated. You end up simply tolerating your woman's moods while resentment builds inside of you. You wonder, what's her problem? Why can't she just be happy? The feminine part of your woman is either opening and loving surrender, easy moments, or closing in what ends up being an emotional test of your capacity to open her, difficult moments. This cycle of the feminine is like all cycles in nature. It never ends. The sooner you learn to embrace and dance with these moods of closure, the sooner both of you will grow beyond the psychodrama and see the humor of the play. Instead of tolerating your woman's moods of closure and complaint, open her moods with your skillful loving. It is your gift to give. Both of you will grow more by your giving than by your tolerating. A superior man sees his woman's moods not as a curse, but as a challenge and an amusement. There are many ways to creatively deal with her moods and help her to open. Tickle her. Take off your clothes and dance the Watusi. Sing opera for her. Make animal sounds. Shout at her louder than you ever have, then kiss her passionately. Press your belly into her until she melts. Lift her off the ground and spin her around. Occasionally, talking with her helps, but not as often as humor and physically expressed love. If you have tried every creative, humorous, and powerful way of loving her through her mood, and she still refuses to let go of her closure, then simply relax. You have done everything you can. If you are not skillful enough to serve her, or she is not willing enough to receive your gifts, perhaps you are with the wrong woman. Just remember that any woman you are with, if she has a feminine sexual essence, will cycle through moods of closure every day which seem to have no reason to them. You cannot avoid this by changing women or waiting for the moods to stop. You can only develop your skill in serving your woman into openness. It never ends, though, even if you are passionate, fearless, loving, and humorous with her. The weather continually cycles through rainy and dry spells. Night and day cycle in their turn, and your woman will continually cycle through openness and closure, even when her life and relationship with you seem great. If you find yourself merely tolerating this feminine mood cycle because you have been frustrated by endless discussions that go nowhere, you can be sure that you, and probably your woman, are building up resentment toward each other. Don't tolerate her mood, and don't talk about it with her. Participate in it. Bloom her into fullness. Move her body with your body. Open her heart with your humor. Penetrate her closure with your fearless presence. Open her heart again and again and again. She could do it by herself, but if she could grow more by herself than by receiving your gifts, perhaps she shouldn't be with you. Chapter 19. Don't analyze your woman. The feminine's moods and opinions are like weather patterns. They are constantly changing, severe and gentle, and they have no single source. No analysis will work. There is no linear chain of cause and effect that can lead to the kernel of the problem. There is no problem, only a storm, a breeze, a sudden change in weather. And the basis of these storms are the high and low pressure systems of love. When a woman feels love flowing deeply, her mood can instantly evaporate into joy, regardless of the supposed reason for the mood. As a man, you probably want to find the cause for the problems in your life. That way, you can eliminate the source of the problem. By getting to its root, you can solve the problem, hopefully once and for all. And so, when your woman seems to have an emotional problem, you want to know why. You want to know what is upsetting her. You assume there is a specific cause. You want to know what triggered her bad mood so you can fix the situation. Because you love her, you begin asking her questions to get to the root of the problem. What's wrong? Did I do something to upset you? What are you crying about? Are you about to start your period? Did somebody say something horrible to you? You are under the illusion that when you find out the cause of her affliction, then the cure will easily follow. But it doesn't work that way. Your questioning is probably making her mood worse. The amazing thing is this. 90% of a woman's emotional problems stem from feeling unloved. So don't stand back and analyze her like a doctor diagnosing a patient, or like a therapist questioning a client. Give her your love, the same love that is motivating your questioning, immediately and unmistakably. Walk over to her, look deeply into her eyes, hold her and stroke her. Tell her how much you love her. Smile, hum her favorite song and dance with her. And chances are her emotional problem will evaporate. She may still have some situation to deal with, and you may be able to help her with that, but the emotional aspect will be converted to love. It is a very rare occasion when your analysis of her mood relieves her of it. Most often, your analysis and attempts to fix her will just piss her off more. Ask her if she would rather you give her love or analyze her when she is upset. It's so easy to give her love. It's what both of you really want anyway. But as a man, you are more likely to try to fix her. That's exactly not what she wants, and exactly what will make the situation worse, most of the time. The next time your woman is in a bad mood, try this. Assume she is not feeling loved. Simply assume it. Even if it seems that it can't be that simple. That there must be some underlying reason for her upsetness. A reason that you could fix. Assume she is more like a flower that needs watering than an engine that needs a carburetor adjustment. Don't assume anything is wrong at all. Assume that she wants love from you in a deep, strong, steady, and sensitive way. Look into her eyes with love. Touch her how she likes to be touched with love. And speak or sing to her with love. Discover what happens to her mood. Then, after her mood has been dissolved by your loving and she is happy and relaxed, you can talk about anything that still needs to be talked about. If you ever find yourself asking your woman questions about her mood while she is still in it, you are already on the wrong road. First, give her love through your eyes, touch, movement, and tone of voice. Then, and only then, after the connection of love has been made, find out what remains to be talked about. Chapter 20. Don't suggest that a woman fix her own emotional problem. Asking a woman to analyze or try to fix her own emotions is a negation of her feminine core, which is pure energy in motion, like the ocean. She can learn to surrender her mood to God. She can learn to open her heart in the midst of closure. she can learn to relax her edges and trust love, but she will never fix anything by analyzing her problem. As a man, you can learn a lot about yourself by clearly analyzing your problems. One of the best ways for you to grow is to use your discrimination, feeling what is causing unnecessary pain in your life, and then changing whatever you need to change. You may notice, for instance, that you are unhappy with your job. You think about it. You realize it is because your boss is taking advantage of you, and you haven't said anything to him. So, you determine that the best way to deal with the problem is to walk up to the boss and say something. You get up the guts, you walk up to the boss, and you get it off your chest, and it's over. Problem fixed. Finished. You learned how important it is to talk to your boss, and you've cleared up all the old stuff that has been burdening you. You probably apply the same system to your intimacy. You realize that you're not happy about something your wife is doing. Maybe you talk about it with your friends or think about it yourself. You realize that your wife isn't caring for you like she used to, so you determine that you'll be happier if your wife cooks more and massages you more. You then think maybe your wife wants you to do something more for her. So you tell her what you want from her, and then you ask her, "What do you want from me?" You tell her to think about it and let you know. This seems fair to a man, but it is not. It is a no-win situation for your woman. Why? Because what she really wants is a man who can figure it out for himself. She wants a man who loves her and escorts her with his loving, without having to ask her what she wants all the time. One of the deepest feminine desires in intimacy is precisely not to have to always figure it out for her man and guide him. She wants to be able to trust him in his direction. There are some times when she does want to figure it out for you, but far more often she feels your gift when you offer her a direction in your intimacy without her having to ask you for it or tell you what she wants. Suppose it's your woman's birthday. If it were your birthday, you would love it if your woman would do anything you wanted. So you think she'd like that too. You say to her, "Happy birthday. For your birthday, we can do anything you want. We can go anywhere and do anything, and I'll do anything for you. What do you want to do?" This is exactly the opposite of most women's idea of an ideal birthday present. Most women would get far more excited if you were to say, "You've got 30 minutes to pack your bags. Don't ask me where we're going, but we'll be gone for the weekend. Everything is taken care of. Just pack your bags and leave the rest to me. I'm going to give you the best birthday you've ever had." One of the deepest feminine desires in intimacy, though not in business or simple friendship, is to be able to relax and surrender, knowing that her man is taking care of everything. Then she can simply enjoy without having to plan it all herself and tell her man what to do. She can be pure energy, pure emotion, pure love, without having to analyze all the options and decide which ones are best. She can enjoy her man taking responsibility for the direction, so she can be what the feminine is, pure energy. Like the ocean, the native state of the feminine is to flow with great power and no single direction. The masculine builds canals, dams, and boats to unite with the power of the feminine ocean and go from point A to point B. But the feminine moves in many directions at once. The masculine chooses a single goal and moves in that direction. Like a ship cutting through a vast ocean, the masculine decides on a course and navigates the direction. The feminine energy itself is undirected but immense. Like the wind and deep currents of the ocean, ever-changing, beautiful, destructive, and the source of life. The same principle applies to problems in intimacy. Anytime you try to force your woman to be more like a ship than an ocean, you are negating her feminine energy. Anytime you talk to her and expect her to analyze her mood and situation to the point of being able to fix it, you are talking masculine with her. She can do it. She might even be better at it than you, but it won't make her a happy woman. A happy woman is a woman relaxed in her body and heart, powerful, unpredictable, deep, potentially wild and destructive, or calm and serene, but always full of life, surrendered to and moved by the great force of her oceanic heart. When you ask her to analyze her heart's emotions, it's like building walls around a part of the ocean and turning it into a swimming pool. It's safer and more predictable, but far less alive and enlivening. Most men have made their women into swimming pools by continually treating them like men, talking with them about their feelings as if they can be analyzed to the point of fixing them.